So, Chris, I got to tell you, man, you know, this past week, I'm riding my tail off to try to get the new season ready to go. Because, right. you know, we take the content that we put out very seriously. It takes a lot of effort. We're deep into it. And I don't think with the writing schedule that I had put out for myself for the last couple of weeks, I would not have been able to get through those tasks had I not been taking the Magic Mind product that we've been taking. Look, those shots, you knock one out. I do it first thing in the morning. I knock one out in the morning, maybe not have a cup of coffee, but it helps me focus. It helps me, you know, stay on task. And what I love about it is that it's 100% safe.
Yep.
Okay. You know, it's doctor validated. There's all these scientific studies behind every ingredient.
Well, there's 200 scientific studies behind each ingredient.
And I mean, that's what's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it. So, and you know, you and I are mushroom guys. You know, we take mushrooms and not the psychotropic stuff that makes us freaky.
The good stuff.
Right.
Not the other stuff.
But these mushrooms are grown in California and they're harvested in such a way that they get the full benefit of that mushroom. And look, you know, I know you're an artist too. You know, you spend a lot of time at the table trying to stay focused, trying to get that art piece, that commission piece out the door.
Oh, I can get distracted in a heartbeat. But when I took the Magic Mind, I wasn't. I was very focused.
Yeah.
I didn't get the crash. And it was nice
yeah.
to just, I was very productive.
Yeah.
It was very nice. And the thing is, we've partnered with them. And if you click on the link in our show notes, you get 45% off Magic Mind.
Right.
And the other thing is, if you ain't feeling it, they're going to give you 100% refund.
Yeah. Right.
And who else does that?
Right. No questions asked. You just let them, you know, I tried it. It wasn't for me. But I'm telling you, nobody that I've talked to, we know some other folks in the business, in the podcasting world, that have started using Magic Mind as well. And they all say the same thing.
Yeah. So. And, you know, and like I said, me, I don't do the energy drinks. I don't do any of that stuff. But Magic Mind worked for me.
Good. All right, well, I'm glad that we're partnering with them. So again, just to reiterate what you said a moment ago, if for those of you who are listening, we'll put the link in the show notes. Click on it, you get 45% off the Magic Mind bundle.
Yeah.
All right, man, let's get to it.
See ya.
Johnny Reaper roared into town behind the wheel of his tricked-out 1931 Ford hearse that had been turned into a rat rod that was low-slung with a chopped top. It had a massive engine that ran on depravity, of which there was a never-ending supply, and spat hellfire out of the chromed-out exhaust pipes. Johnny had no face. He'd lost it back in 1955 when he'd crashed his rat rod during a drag race against Jimmy Siskel. He had slammed through the front windshield, then skidded face first along the street. And all that was left was a grinning skull and his high, slick pompadour. That crash had killed his sweet Lola, who was his girl. She had been riding shotgun that night and had been thrown from the car as it rolled and flipped, leaving her sprawled on the street like a blood-soaked rag doll. Johnny loved Lola more than anything. She had been stacked back then, with her cherry red lips and her cat-eye peeps. She'd had that rockabilly pinup vibe that made all the cats drool. But she had eyes for no one but him. They were soulmates, and they'd do anything for each other. In fact, she'd been the one who gave him an alibi when he'd knifed that greaser from the Southside Saints, and he couldn't bear the idea that he'd gotten her killed all because he needed to feed his ego and win another damn drag race. That night, as he lay on the street, his leather jacket and jeans ripped and torn, he knew that he was going to survive, though without a face. But when he glanced at his sweet Lola's broken body. The pain of not spending his life with her was too much to bear. That's why, when the devil showed up and offered him a deal that would give him back his Lola, he had taken it without question. And that had been the worst mistake of his miserable life. The devil had told Johnny that he could bring his Lola back from the dead and that they could live together forever and never grow old. All that Johnny had to do was agree to be a collector of souls. Well, Johnny hadn't clarified if these souls were of the innocent or of the wicked, and he really didn't give a damn, as long as he could cruise in his rat rod with Lola by his side. So, without the slightest attempt to work through the details of this deal, Johnny had agreed. And the devil had kept his end of the bargain, though with a terrible twist. Johnny would live, forever youthful, with his pompadour and his sideburns and his body intact, except for his face. And that was a nasty trick to play on a man who wanted to look cool for his girl. But the demon had an even nastier surprise in store when it came to resurrecting his Lola. She was alive, all right. But the evil bastard had cast her soul inside a black body bag. Since that night, Johnny rode from town to town, collecting the souls he was told to collect, and fed them to his sweet Lola, who was always hungry. He glanced in the back seat and saw her laid out, trembling with hunger, saw the zipper made of human teeth, and was thankful that they were together, even under these macabre circumstances. He looked up just as his headlights illuminated a sign which read, "Welcome to Nevermore Hollows, a town you just can't leave." If he'd had lips, they would have pulled back into a sad smile.
"Soon, baby girl. Soon. We're almost there."
Most people would never be able to recall seeing the hearse. That was because their minds were so closed off to the truth of a supernatural realm. Even so, if they had happened to be on the street when it passed, they'd experience a moment of profound dread and would suffer a shiver as their blood seemed to freeze, and they'd struggle to give an answer as to why this occurred. Those few whose minds and eyes are open to the supernatural would recall seeing the low-slung hearse grumble by, enveloped in an eerie green aura with psychobilly music blaring from the windows. And they'd see the faceless driver with his pompadour and leather jacket. And they'd know that he had come for someone. And they'd say a silent prayer of thanks that it was not for them. Johnny cruised down Main Street, which was empty at this hour, then drove down other streets looking for the address of his next soul. He rumbled past Lovecraft Park with its massive wrought iron gate and finally made his way to Butcher Street. At the end of the cul-de-sac was a large craftsman that belonged to one of Nevermore Hollow's most successful men. Johnny parked at the curb, in the cone of cancer-colored light under an antique-style street lamp. He exited the rod and opened the back door. He leaned in and grabbed the handle at the top of the body bag and pulled it out onto the sidewalk. Though only Lola's spirit was inside and not her body, she was warm and heavy to the touch. She'd never been heavy in real life. Not Lola. She'd been a petite 5'5" with tattoos and piercings, which were scandalous back then because nice girls wore poodle dresses and bobby socks, and she had curves in all the right places. And boy, did he loved the way she felt in his arms and the things she was willing to do when they played backseat bingo. But during the first decade of their afterlife, they'd been miserable because they had not been able to touch each other like they had been able to when they were both alive. The devil had made sure that the body bag had the sensitivity of real skin so that Lola could feel Johnny's touch, though she would forever be unable to return the intimate gesture. The devil had intended this to be a curse, but they'd figured out how to work around it. Johnny discovered that Lola liked it when he dragged her along various surfaces, and he felt her shiver with ecstasy as the sidewalk scraped against her dark skin. Lola had always liked a little pain, and he always got off on causing her a little. Slowly, they learned that their love was deeper than death, and that intimacy could be something much different, much darker than anything they'd shared in life. For example, before they died, Johnny had killed two people. One had been that Southside Saints greaser, and the other was an old woman named Beatrice who Lola absolutely hated for some reason. They'd killed that old bitch together, and it had been a crazy blast and a real turn-on. They had wanted to kill others, but knew that sooner or later they might be found out and arrested and separated. So they'd always been careful, held themselves back. But not in death. The devil didn't care how they collected the souls he told them to collect, and he didn't care who else they murdered as they traveled the country. The more they murdered, the better. They had free rein to kill without the fear of being caught and judged. So they had let loose their murderous desires and had learned to kill in such exquisitely depraved ways. And they'd realized that by doing this together, they could share an intimacy that life would never have allowed. So, with eager desire, Johnny dragged a quivering Lola through the pale wash of moonlight, across the dark yard and up onto the porch of the Craftsman. This was where Derek Mole lived. Derek was 35, successful, and arrogant. The folks in town thought that he'd gotten his wealth as a successful day trader, but the truth was that his wealth was the result of a deal that he'd made with the devil. 10 years ago, on his 25th birthday, Derek had already shown a great talent for writing computer code. One afternoon, he was sitting at a bar, sipping expensive whiskey, trying to figure out how to get rich with minimal effort, when the devil sat on the stool beside him. And he'd offered Derek a deal. Derek would use his coding gifts to create a secure website and database that would help auction off women and children who had been abducted by human traffickers. The site needed to be unbreachable by any police agency or government authority in the world. In return, the devil promised him wealth beyond his wildest dreams. Derek had eagerly accepted the offer, and tonight was the night the devil had decided to come for his soul. Johnny would feed Derek to Lola, and he'd take Derek's young, pretty wife, Betsy, just for fun. Betsy would claim she didn't know where Derek's money came from, but that was a lie. She'd overheard snippets of conversation between her husband and the evil men he was doing business with, but she pushed it out of her mind. She didn't care what he did as long as she had the big house, the Bentley, and the seemingly unlimited supply of money. Johnny and Lola stood on the porch, illuminated only by a ghostly beam of moonlight. Johnny grabbed the doorknob and twisted. The door opened. They always did. There was no lock that could resist them. And he pushed through and dragged Lola behind him. He stopped at the foot of the stairs that led up to the second floor. That's where Derek and Betsy would be at this late hour. For the first week after he had made his deal with the devil, Lola was unable to speak. Or maybe he'd just been unable to hear her. But on the 10th day of their afterlife, they'd been collecting their first soul for the devil, and when Johnny had zipped the dead man's body inside Lola, she moaned in ecstasy and told him that she was hungry for more. He'd been so relieved, so happy to hear her voice that he would have cried if he'd had a means to do so. And they had traveled the world collecting souls and lovingly speaking to each other ever since. Or maybe, Johnny often thought, I've lost my mind and I'm only making it all up in my head because I want to hear her voice so badly. They're both asleep, lover boy, Lola said. Her voice was still as throaty and sexy as it ever was when she was alive.
Yeah, I figured.
Johnny knew Lola could sense things that he couldn't, like which room the moles were in. But again, he often caught himself wondering if he was really the one who could sense these things, and through his psychosis, he chose to think it was Lola who had the ability. But they aren't in the same room, Lola whispered. I guess Betsy's old man can't rev her engine anymore. Johnny thought that maybe it was that way for both Betsy and Derek. Money is what pumped their pistons, not love for one another. And maybe Derek got his rocks off to something a bit darker, considering his line of work.
Ain't none of our concern, baby girl.
He started up the steps, pulling Lola along behind him, when the light in the hallway blinked on. Derek came padding down the hallway, wearing silk pajamas. Even though it was well past midnight, he had not yet fallen asleep, as he had been sitting in bed, scrolling a website, trying to decide if he should buy another Rolex. He already had four, but recently had found out that one of the United States senators that he was friends with had just bought another, and he had to make sure that he kept up his own materialistic appearances. He stopped short when he reached the head of the stairs. He glanced down at Johnny and Lola, who stood about halfway up. He took in Johnny's 1950s greaser clothing, pompadour hairdo that framed his leering skull, and the fact that he was dragging a body bag with a zipper made of human teeth. He then rubbed his eyes and opened them again, as if trying to wake himself from a nightmare. When it was clear that Johnny was real, Derek became indignant at the intrusion. What the hell are you doing in my house? And is that some kind of mask?
This ain't no mask, Daddy-o. It's all real.
Derek noticed that Johnny's jaw moved, and words came out, even though he had no lips with which to enunciate. And while it didn't make any sense, Derek knew that it was not a mask. It was real. His acceptance did not take a giant leap of logic, because he already knew that the devil was real, and that he made deals with humans. If the devil was real, then so were other supernatural creatures. For a heartbeat, his indignation wavered a bit, but his arrogance and narcissism reasserted itself. You have no business here with me. I'm protected. Lola whispered in Johnny's ear. Poor guy's a dope. He thinks the devil gives a damn about him. Derek cocked his head as if he'd heard Lola. Johnny hoped that he had, because that would mean she was real and not just a scrap of broken-hearted psychosis that he clung to. The urge to ask Derek tried to crawl up his throat, but he choked it down. He feared that Derek would not have heard, and Johnny knew that he'd go completely mad at the idea that Lola wasn't really able to speak to him. I'll tell you again, Derek said. He pointed a manicured finger at Johnny and Lola. I am under protection of the devil, and I command you to leave. Johnny rolled his eyes in their exposed sockets.
Who you think sent us, Daddy-o?
Derek had opened his mouth to give another command, but Johnny's response made him pause. He had a confused look on his face for the briefest moment. Then he decided to stand his ground. I am doing important work for the devil, and
someone else can take over and do it now.
Derek's anger and self-assuredness morphed into worry. Well, this makes no sense. Our agreement was that I would create a secure site to help him in his human trafficking, and he'd make me rich. I sold him my talents, not my soul. That wasn't part of the deal.
Don't be a fool, little man. It's always a part of the deal.
Lola gave a low, delicious giggle that revved Johnny's engine for sure. With that, he marched up the stairs, dragging Lola behind him, toward the dumbstruck Derek, who stumbled back across the hallway. He was stopped when his back hit the wall, and he stood there, unable to move. But I don't want to die, Derek said.
Neither did I, but look at me now, a rebel without a soul.
Johnny pulled his switchblade from his back pocket and flicked it open. The razor-sharp blade made a surprisingly loud click when it sprang from the handle. It gleamed dully in the hallway light.
You don't have to do this. I'm still valuable to the cause. I can make a new deal.
That's what they all say every damn time. But the devil is a one-and-done kind of guy. Now, don't be a drag, man. Let me get you ready so I can feed you to my Lola.
Derek tried to move, but was held in place by the power of Johnny's dark will. Johnny's first slice was across the throat, but not across the carotid arteries, and not so deep that it killed Derek, just deep enough to make the heart race and the blood flow. Then came the stabbing. 66 in all. None of them deadly. And when he was done, he released his supernatural hold on Derek and let him slip to the floor in a whimpering, bloody heap. Johnny turned to Lola. The human teeth of her zipper made a dull clicking as he opened her up, exposing a darkness so deep that it appeared to be the entrance to the abyss. Derek had begged for mercy as Johnny had carved him up, but upon seeing inside Lola, he had the most profound understanding of his life, and he began to sob uncontrollably. He was no longer worried about his body, which was afire with the worst physical pain he had ever experienced, but instead, he was consumed with terror at the thought that his spirit, his soul, would be forever in the vast void that was inside the body bag. Johnny grabbed him by the shoulders and rolled him inside Lola. Then he slowly pulled the zipper closed, the teeth making that hollow clicking noise. And Derek screamed.
"Thank you, Johnny, baby," Lola moaned. His depravity was delicious.
Johnny slowly caressed her.
"We still have his wife to go."
Lola trembled in anticipation. Johnny stood and dragged her down the hallway to Betsy's bedroom. He pushed open the door and saw that the room was awash in candlelight. Betsy was sitting up in her bed, wearing a negligee, using her noise-canceling earbuds and laptop to facilitate a perverse conversation with one of her two lovers. When the door swung open, she glanced over, and her eyes shot wide in horror at the sight of Johnny. The candlelight caused shadows to squirm across his skeleton face, and she was so terrified that she screamed and tried to push herself out of bed. But Johnny flicked his wrist, and she was immobilized by his dark will. He walked over to the side of the bed and looked down on her. Tears streamed down her face. She was breathing fast and hard. Her pulse was pounding in her throat, her heart hammering against her ample chest. She had already been an attractive woman before meeting Derek, and at only 32 years old, she'd had enough plastic surgery to make herself into her own perfect image. Johnny closed the laptop and removed the earbuds.
"Ain't you a sight to see? You paid a lot of money for that classy chassis. A lot of good it's going to do you now."
Though Johnny was using his will to keep her immobile, he allowed her to speak. Through thick sobs, she said,
Who are you? What are you? What do you want from me?"
"I don't want nothing you got. Bimbos like you come a dime a dozen. I prefer only my Lola.
Oh, baby, that's so sweet, Lola said. But hurry up. I'm hungry. Betsy's eyes darted toward the body bag. What is that thing? It seemed as if she had heard Lola speak. And again, Johnny wrestled with the desire to know for certain that Lola's soul, her consciousness, was really with him. But the angst of not being sure was better than the misery of knowing that she wasn't really with him at all. So he didn't ask the terrified woman.
This here is Lola, and we've come to collect your soul.
No, no, that can't be right. Why? Johnny rolled his eyes. It was a gruesome sight.
Come on now. You know what your husband was into, how he made his fortune.
Betsy shook her head. No, no, I didn't. Johnny nodded.
I ain't here to argue with you. Derek made a deal with the devil 10 years back, and the devil decided the payment has come due. I've already collected his soul. Now I gotta collect yours.
Though her sobbing had subsided, tears still flowed down her cheeks. Then, understanding that the mere presence of Johnny meant that something deep and profound was happening and that she needed to come clean, she said, Okay, look, maybe I did suspect, maybe I heard a few things, but I never participated in it, never. And I never met the devil, and I never sold him my soul. Johnny would have grinned if he'd had a face.
You could have stopped your husband, but you didn't. You knowingly chose to wallow in tarnished wealth gained by wicked means. So, baby, the devil didn't need to buy your soul. You gave it away for free.
Johnny flicked open his switchblade, then went to work deconstructing Betsy's carefully crafted image. When he was done removing her face, he tossed it aside and carefully placed Lola beside her on the bed. He opened Lola up and zipped Betsy inside. Betsy did not scream because her mind had snapped, but that was okay. Lola didn't mind if they'd gone crazy or remained sane as long as she got to feed. That was so good, baby, Lola whispered. Where to next? Johnny considered his response for a moment, quietly listening for instructions from his evil boss. After a moment, he said,
Well, baby girl, the devil says we stay here. There's something special about this town. It's full of goodness and light, but it's also got a special kind of rot. There's a lot of wicked souls here, enough to feed you for a long time, and for me to have a lot of fun.
Oh, I like that, Johnny baby. I like it a lot. Johnny was pleased. He dragged Lola down the stairs, across the yard, and put her in the back of the hearse, which sat glowing in a putrid green aura under the streetlight. Then he started the engine. It grumbled to life, and music blared from the stereo. It was one of his favorites, a song by the Cramps titled Human Fly.
I say we take a ride and see what kind of hell we can raise.
He put the rod in gear, pulled away from the curb, and cruised the town of Nevermore Hollows, looking for souls that he could feed to his sweet Lola.